So we've been in a sermon series. This is week number 5, the last week of this series, where we've been looking at the questions that Jesus asks other people. I'm calling the series Good Questions, because they really are powerful and potent questions in the context that they're in. So if we asked most of these questions outside of their context, we'd just say, they're regular questions. But we've been taking time in this series to look at the way that Jesus asks the questions. What are the words that he's using? Why does he say things this way? Who is the audience? What do they need to hear that day? And here's something that's been really interesting about this sermon series. I always appreciate feedback when people give it to me, and I've been getting a lot of feedback about this series, about how it's sort of hitting people right where they are, and it's been helpful. And while I'd like to take the credit for that, these are Jesus's questions, right? Jesus has an ability to do that to us. If I'm open to allowing Jesus to get in, then Jesus will meet me right where I am. Now, I also have an ability to block that, right? I can step up and put things other things in my life and stop that. But I think this series resonates with people not because of me or whoever was preaching the sermon, not because of the great illustration that was used, but because of the way that Jesus asks the question and to whom Jesus is asking. And I think it hits us right where we are. So today we find ourselves in the very last chapter in the book of John, the fourth book in the New Testament. The very last chapter. Now, there's some debate about this chapter as to who wrote it. You say, that's weird. It's in the book of John. But some people say it doesn't sound like John. It sounds a little different. John would have been done by this point. My first thing I say to that is, I really don't care, right? Let me just name that and own that. But the second thing I want to say to that is, I think if John didn't write it, then the people in John's community needed to write this piece. And I'll tell you why. Just before this, just before John 21, we find the beloved Peter denying Jesus 3 times. Right before Jesus dies, Peter denies him 3 times. And the Johannine community, this community that John's writing to, loves Peter. They love him, and there is no way that Peter's story can end this way, because they had heard the rest of the story. It wasn't that Peter just denied Jesus and ran off, and they never heard from him again. If you read the book of Acts, you'll see more about him. But this community couldn't be left at the end of this story with Peter just being a nobody bad guy. So the rest of his story is told. There was also questions, if you just got to the end of it, that maybe Jesus just died and then he went straight to heaven and that was the end of the story. That there was no interaction after the death of Jesus with humanity. And the people would have had a problem with that. The other thing that would have been challenging was there were some in the community that would have been arguing over who was more powerful and maybe who was actually God, Peter or Jesus. So this last chapter puts all of that to bed. It really wraps up Peter's interaction with Jesus. It wraps up that Jesus is Jesus, the Son of God, and it wraps up this idea that the story doesn't end for Peter. There is restoration for him. Restoration comes. So we find ourselves in John chapter 21, and right before where I'm going to read this morning, the disciples are out, those people who are following Jesus, they're out fishing. And it's going really poorly for them. Now, this could be a bit of metaphor because in the beginning, when Jesus meets them, they're fishing. Jesus says, I don't want you to fish for fish. I want you to fish for people. And subsequently, they go, okay, we'll come follow you. So now, Jesus has come back, and guess what they're doing again? Fishing. And it's going really, really poorly. They're not catching anything. And they hear a voice, and they see someone off in the distance. And this voice says, throw your net over to the other side. They do it, and guess what? Lots of fish. Things come in. Peter recognizes that it's Jesus. He so deeply loves Jesus that he gets out of the boat and does what? He runs. It's very common for Peter's character to run to Jesus. Now, first century men did not run. Let me name that. That was below them, beneath them. And Peter gets out and he runs to Jesus. And that takes us to where we are in John chapter 21. It says, when they had finished breakfast, they sat down to eat. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands. Someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." Now, this is a big question that Jesus asked Peter here. He says, "Do you love me more than these?" And that's the question we're going to wrestle with today. Do you love me more than these? Now, there's a question that a lot of people ask. Jesus doesn't say what these are, right? We don't see the motion. Is it, do you love me more than these other disciples? Do you love me more than these fish that you just pulled in? Do you love me more than? And what scholars who study this say, the word "these" there for Jesus means anything. Do you love me more than anything? That's why Jesus doesn't give him a specific word. Do you love me more than anything else? Now, I don't know if you noticed it, but I noticed in the scripture, Peter seems really put out by the question. Why are you asking me this? Of course I love you. The scripture says he was hurt by the question. Perhaps Peter has forgotten about what we just read about in the chapter before. How quickly we forget. Perhaps Peter has forgotten that just in the chapter before, when he was forced to answer the question, not from Jesus but from other people, he said, "I don't know this guy." There's a commercial that's out on Hulu right now. If you don't have Hulu, you probably haven't seen it, but it pops up all the time before those shows that aren't commercial free that we have. Right? We pay for the commercial free version, but there's a couple non-commercial free shows. And this Hulu commercial comes up, and I think it's fantastic, so I just wanted to show it to you this morning.
I'm home.
Oh.
What are you doing?
Just watching a game.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm taking a shower.
Okay.
This is a great commercial. I am the king of rewatching old shows. Right now I'm watching How I Met Your Mother again, the whole series. But I love this commercial because he is so embarrassed when his wife walks in the room that he's watching Dawson's Creek. He's so embarrassed, yet he wants to do it. That guilty pleasure desire in him wants to go and watch the show. And when I was thinking about this commercial this week, I was thinking, I wonder how often our life with Jesus is sort of like this. Maybe in private, we're very, very comfortable, but someone walks in the room and instantly we go, "No, I'm just watching sports." "No, I'm just doing this." And I think we're not like Peter, where we're scared for our faith, most of us, right? We're not scared we're going to be persecuted. But I wonder how many of us live in a place where we're like, "Yeah, I believe in Jesus, but I don't know that I really want anyone else to know that. I don't want anybody who's observing around me to see that that's a show I like to be part of, that that's something I want to step into." So we spend a lot of our lives sort of doing these turns where we're like, "All right, when I'm with these people, I better do what they want me to do. When I'm with these people, I better do what they want me to do. And then my faith can be over here on the side. It's just this little piece of me." And Jesus recognizes that a little bit in Peter, and that's why he asked him the question, "Do you love me more than these?" I wonder if Jesus were to ask you the question this morning, how you might respond. What you might say. I'm not going to ask you to tell your neighbor or anything, but I wonder if you could do a little self-assessment this morning. Do you love me more than anything? You could fill in the blank if Jesus asked you the question, do you love me more than these? Fill in the blank with things like, do you love me more than sports? Do you love me more than your job? Do you love me more than money? Do you love me more than your social status? Do you love me more than accolades? Do you love me more than, and just keep going? Because that seems to be the question that Jesus is asking this disciple. Do you love me more than anything? Are there things that are blocking you from loving me more than anything? Now, how does Peter respond to Jesus? I want to look at that again because I think it's important what he says. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And he does it a third time. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus, you know that I love you. But you, like me, probably know that words can be really cheap, right? We can say things all the time. We can say, yes, I love you. I was thinking this week about my family. And I was thinking if every time people asked me about my family, if I just sort of dismissed it, how would people think that I felt about my family? If I never spent time with them, how would people think that I felt? If somebody knew me for 2 months and had no clue that I had 3 kids and a wife, what does that say about the way that I feel about them? I think in our faith, many of us spend a lot of our life pretending like that boxed compartmentalized piece is not part of the story, is not part of our lives. So how do we actually answer this question in a way that makes Christ part of our lives? Here's the first thing I think. I think that our lives should imitate him. Our lives should imitate Christ. You notice I didn't say that we should just say the words that Jesus says. I think words are cheap when they're not followed by any sort of action. But our lives should imitate Christ, and we see it all throughout Scripture, ways to imitate Jesus. We should interact with people the rest of the world doesn't seem to interact with. We love, even when things are hard. We don't let anger lead conversations. We forgive quickly. We go out of our way to engage people when they come up to us. We are servants. Read Philippians chapter 2 if you want to know what Jesus' life looked like and how we imitate him. When I first became a parent of our oldest, Jackson, there was this country song that was on the radio by Phillips Craig and Dean. And it's a song about parenting, but I want to read you just a little bit of the words today. I'm back into country music again, by the way. So if you don't like that, that sounds like a personal problem. But let me read the words that he says here. He sings, he climbs in my lap for a goodnight hug. He calls me dad and I call him bub. I love country music. He calls me dad, I call him bub. With his faded old pillow and a bear named Pooh, he snuggles up close and says, I want to be like you. I tucked him in bed and I kiss him goodnight, tripping over the toys as I turn out the light. And I whisper a prayer that someday he'll see he's got a father in God because he's seen Jesus in me. Lord, I want to be just like you because he wants to be just like me. I want to be a holy example for his innocent eyes to see. Help me be a living Bible, Lord. Did you notice that? A living Bible that my little boy can read. I want to be just like you because he wants to be just like me. One of the greatest ways for us to show Christ that we love him is to imitate him, is to try to be like him. Not because we think that's some box to check, but because that's actually transformative to the world. Here's the second thing. Let our joys be Christ's joys. What do I mean by that? The things that brings Christ joy in Scripture should be the things that bring us joy. I think about just a few moments. When the disciples feed 5,000 people, Jesus is delighted in that moment. When the little children come to him and the disciples try to push him away, he's mad at them and has joy for the children. When Zacchaeus, a guy who nobody in the whole community likes, finally makes the decision that he wants to be in ultimate relationship with Jesus, he wants to change his life, that brings Christ, joy. I think there are so many things that can fill us with joy if we care about the things that Jesus cares about. Jesus cared about the people who were on the margins when they're feeling valued. That brought him joy. Jesus is filled with joy when people are seen as people that God created them to be. Jesus is filled with joy when we build people up rather than tear them down. Do you know how much time we spend tearing people down? Do you know when I think about my own life and I think about those moments where I was hoping to get a promotion or I was hoping something would go easier and I am not filled with joy for the person that it does? The things that bring Jesus joy should bring us joy. That's a way to answer that question, do you love me more than these? And finally, I think the way to ask that question is that we should allow our heartaches to be the heartaches that Jesus has. So not only should we find joy in the things that Christ finds joy in, but the things that bring him sadness, we should feel sad about. We should feel sad about injustices in this world, and we should stand up against them. We should be sad. The most recent thing in the news about children being separated from their families, that should make us sad. I was thinking when I was holding Ellie this morning, first of all, how much I love her. And what a gift she is. What incredible parents she has. And what a blessing they are. And as I was carrying her down, I thought about it. Our commitment to children is not just for the children that we see and the children that we like. Our commitment is for all children to care about them. We should care when there are people on the margins who society is saying, you don't matter, you're not valued. You're not loved. That should matter because that breaks God's heart. And it should break our heart too. If we want to answer the question, do you love me more than these? Then we should do what Jesus says to Peter. What does he say? Feed my lambs. And who are the lambs of Jesus? Everybody. Take care of the people that I love. So I wonder today, what breaks your heart? For me this week, I've had the benefit of spending all week in this, doing self-evaluation all week long. I wonder if you'll do your own self-evaluation. I wonder if Jesus is asking you the question, do you love me? And here's what I know, friends. Jesus wants the answer to be yes. Jesus wants the answer to be yes. He's willing to spend time with us until we can say yes, and we do say yes, and he doesn't want us to say yes because it makes him feel better. He doesn't want us to say yes because that's the box people want us to check. You know why he wants us to say yes? Because when we do, our lives are better. Our lives are richer. Our lives are fuller because Christ knows it's the best thing for us.